It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. As primary election results rolled in last night, some candidates took commanding leads, declaring victory early on, while other races, well, we're still waiting to find out whose name will be on the ballot for their party in November. Joining us to examine the results and the potential impact are Julia Taruso, political reporter from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Julia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Ben Forstate is a political consultant. Welcome, Ben.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Dana Brown is the executive director of the Pennsylvania Center for Women in Politics. Dana, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And WESA's government and accountability editor, Chris Potter. Welcome back, Chris.
Good to be with everybody.
All right. To each of you, the biggest surprise, if any, to you from Tuesday's primary. Julia, we're going to start with you.
Okay. I think the biggest surprise for me, I knew it'd be close. I didn't know if we'd be looking at recount close on the Republican-Democratic primary side. I mean, they're still counting votes, so not totally sure, but it's looking very close between Oz and McCormick. And I think just McCormick being so close to Oz right now in the final days, that wasn't really the narrative we were hearing. So that's mine.
All right, Ben, your biggest surprise, if any?
Possibly that a major GOP race is going down to mail voting. I think that is a nice twist on the evening and something that a lot of people did not see happening.
And Dana?
I would say not so much a surprise to me, but potentially a surprise to the Allegheny County Democratic Committee, is that a number of women incumbents did well. You know, we're looking at Jessica Benham and Emily Kincaid retaining their seats despite not getting the endorsements from the party. We're looking at Summer Lee again retaining her state legislative seat, and an upset perhaps in Latasha Mays's seat in state legislative district 24. So not so much surprises to me, but potentially to others listening in.
All right, Chris, you're last.
Yeah, I think, as others have said, the strong performance of Dave McCormick, whose numbers appear to be about 10 points ahead of where his polls were, I think it's another case where we really sort of need to ask about the utility and predictive value of polling, especially amongst Republican voters.
All right. Now, we had heated contests, especially for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate and governor. Were any of you expecting even a higher turnout than what we had? Chris, were you expecting more?
I don't know. The world is complicated, and I don't have a strong. You know, I didn't really have a strong sense of where we would be. The presence of mail-in voting, I think, has really sort of shuffled the deck for me as far as that goes. The sheer profusion of choices, I think, can be confusing for people as well. So, I didn't really have any expectations going into it.
Yeah, Julia, I mean, as a political reporter, it used to be we'd always look at the turnout, but now you've got to add in, and you don't know until they're completely counted, the votes by mail till you really get a true figure of what turnout is.
Right. It's definitely become a multi-day process, counting, getting to know the lay of the land. You know, in, I think it's Lancaster County, they had some issues with some of their mail-in ballots, so we might not hear from them for a little bit. And if it's 10,000 ballots, you know, that could really determine a number of things. I think in terms of voters, I was talking to some yesterday, and there were so many candidates on the ballot. I was struck by how many people we're actually kind of a little confused or unsure of even who they knew who they had voted for in most cases, but in some cases it didn't seem like people had a clear idea of what they were going in to vote for.
Sure, and with you throw in redistricting, obviously it doesn't affect the statewide races, but you throw in redistricting, whether it's for legislative races or U.S. House races, that can also add to the confusion. Where am I voting? What's my district now? So let's move on to the Senate. We definitely know one nominee in the bid to replace Republican U.S. Senator Pat Toomey, not seeking re-election. John Fetterman easily defeated Congressman Connor Lamb. Fetterman remains hospitalized. He had a pacemaker implanted yesterday after suffering a stroke Friday. So his wife, Giselle, hosted the victory party and said November's contest is a race for a better Pennsylvania and a better country.
And one more thing. I think.
Thank you so much for everything. Ah!
How cute is he?
All right, Julia, you were at Fetterman's victory party last night. Were you surprised by the margin of victory over Connor Lamb? About 30 percentage points.
Yeah, it was a decisive win for Fetterman. And, you know, I think that was clear when we had results, but I think before 9 o'clock they were calling the race. You know, I think this was always Fetterman's race to lose. He was the first to get in. He had established himself as this well-known lieutenant governor. He ran, frankly, a very smart and incredibly well-funded campaign on the Democratic side. And the unfortunate news of his stroke came, you know, with days left until the primary and after many people had cast ballots. And I should say, you know, I talked to voters at the polls who said it didn't really make a difference to them. So I think that's sort of a yes and no. I think it was expected to be a pretty decisive victory, but it's certainly, 30 points is huge. And I think he won every county in the state.
Ben, why has John Fetterman become so popular, at least among Democrats, would you say?
I think that he's taken a lot of positions that are popular with Democrats, you know, on legalizing weed, on a few other issues as well. And I think that he's performed well as lieutenant governor. I think he's made the office a lot more visible.
All right, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's another factor here with respect to Lamb in particular. You know, I think when Lamb sort of made his name running in that special election, he was doing that, like, you know, in those first few months after Donald Trump was elected. This is a different environment. This is a sort of a race after Joe Biden has taken office. And Lamb himself said yesterday morning, a lot of the voters that I talked to are frustrated with the lack of progress that Democrats have been able to make in Washington, D.C. I think John Fetterman, in a lot of ways, stylistically and otherwise, is just such an outlier, such a sort of not sort of the establishment. It's a way of Democrats voting for a candidate who doesn't feel like a typical Democrat, who doesn't feel, even though he has held a state office, doesn't feel sort of bound up in that kind of stuff. And I think there are a lot of Democrats who, you know, are kind of feeling the way Republicans have felt, which is frustrated with their own party and the way it seems to hamstring itself sometimes. And Fetterman seems like a guy who can just sort of bulldoze through that stuff.
Who will Fetterman oppose? Well, too close to call. Mehmet Oz has fewer than 2,000 vote edge over Dave McCormick as we're speaking.
Right now, we have tens of thousands of mail-in ballots that have not been counted, that are going to need to be counted beginning tomorrow.
When all the votes are tallied, I am confident we will win.
They spent millions each on this race, hammering each other in TV ads. Are you surprised, Dana, by the closeness of this particular race?
Well, we knew that it was going to be close, looking at the polling going into last night's race. But it does seem that, you know, Kathy Barnett may have acted a bit like a spoiler in some of the collar counties for Dr. Oz. And we know that it is, we're just a couple thousand votes different. So, yeah, I mean, we knew it was going to be close. Doesn't seem like enough voters broke for Kathy Barnett at the end, as many anticipated. And so it looks like Trump may get his win. And if not Trump himself personally and his brand get a win, certainly Trumpism had a good night last night in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Now, John Fetterman has said he'll make a full recovery, but will his health be a campaign issue? Let's hear from Chris Borick, political scientist at Muhlenberg College.
There are undecided voters out there that might, you know, say, well, I don't know if, you know, if he's going to be in a strong condition to run this fall. But apparently, you know, he's made the case that already that he will be. And I don't see it changing a lot of votes moving into election day tomorrow.
All right. Julia, you've been reporting on the Senate race closely. And of course, John Fetterman, were there any concerns expressed about the lieutenant governor's health moving forward with this campaign?
You know, at the polls, I mostly heard people who said it wasn't a factor in their support. We did hear from a couple of voters who said they were kind of between two candidates, and that's what inevitably made them not choose to vote for Fetterman. But I think, you know, you already kind of see the strategy his campaign is laying out here. Last night at the rally, Gisele Fetterman answered questions on this and said, you know, to suggest that he can't do this job because he has a pacemaker is an insult to millions of Americans who have pacemakers. They've talked about the quick response he got at Lancaster Hospital and how they want to make, you know, making sure that emergency care is available all across Pennsylvania in rural areas of another part of their campaign. So I think it's unclear exactly how it'll impact voters, but we certainly see the beginnings of how the campaign is planning to kind of get on the offensive with it.
Ben and Dana, your thoughts on what Boric said about undecided voters and whether health could be a factor in their decision. Ben, first you.
Sure. I mean, I think something I saw at the polls yesterday is that most people came in, especially Democrats, knowing who they were going to vote for. The Democratic race was a lot clearer for a longer time. And I really don't think if you had made up your mind by then, that was going to change it. It just, you know, it didn't seem to be as big a factor.
Mm-hmm. Dana?
Yeah, if I can, I mean, I don't necessarily see independents being moved by someone's health, possible health concerns. It's so much more about the public policy differences. And so, and the two parties right now and their candidates could not be more different on so many fundamental issues, right? Including small D democratic values, right? Whether or not to uphold election results and not, whether to allow women, right, the freedom to have abortion access. I mean, there's just such stark differences that's really, I think, going to motivate the independents one way or another.
And Chris Potter.
Yeah, I will say that I did hear from Democrats yesterday, and these were not Democrats who were friendly to Fetterman, who expressed some concern, not about how this would affect voters' opinions, but how it would affect Fetterman's own ability in terms of his convalescence, his ability to get out and start campaigning. If there's a protracted sort of recovery period and you're yielding the field to Republicans for some period of time, could that have an effect? I think that's a question that really very much remains to be seen. And it depends a lot on sort of how candid the campaign is going forward about this stuff. I mean, there was some concern over the weekend that they were not particularly forthcoming.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. We're exploring the results of the Pennsylvania primary with Julia Taruso, political reporter, Philadelphia Inquirer. Ben Forstate is a political consultant. WESA's government accountability editor, Chris Potter, who you just heard. And Dana Brown. She's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Center for Women in Politics. Well, we knew Josh Shapiro would be the Democratic nominee for governor, unopposed, but seven candidates vying for the GOP nomination. Doug Mastriano outpaced Lou Barletta by 24 percentage points. So how much did former President Trump's last-minute endorsement on Saturday help Mastriano? Let's start with you, Chris.
I mean, it's hard to say. Mastriano also outperformed his polling, I think, by about 10 points. Whether that's a result of Trump's endorsement or just the fact that, again, polling maybe isn't so reliable in a lot of these Republican races, I don't know.
Ben, Melissa Hart and Jake Corman had withdrawn from the race and they endorsed Barletta. That didn't seem to help the former congressman, Lou Barletta.
No, I mean, he did well in his home region in northeastern PA around Luzerne County, but otherwise Mastriano won the rest of the state, except for, I think, two of the collar counties. It seemed like the GOP's decision to try and coalesce around a single candidate was probably too late in the process to really make any difference.
A note, Hart actually got 51,000 votes, 37,000 on election day. Corman received 24,000, 16,000 on election day. I heard a national pundit last night indicate Shapiro actually wanted Mastriano to win the GOP nomination. What do you think about that? Chris?
Yeah, I mean, definitely they spent money on his behalf to help him over the finish line. There's some discussion about whether that's a smart strategy for Republicans. Look, a lot of this feels like 2016. We saw the same thing, Republicans not getting out of this race until too late to stop Donald Trump. and Democrats sort of rubbing their hands and cackling with glee because they thought Donald Trump was too wild a card to ever get elected. Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you that that may well be a mistake for Democrats. If you're, for example, a pro-life, anti-choice person, do you think that the concerns voiced by Republicans that Doug Mastriano may not be electable are going to stop you at all? You see this moment right now if you're a conservative, you see this moment with a Supreme Court ruling, with a big Republican wave coming. This is your moment. You are not going to like pull punches in November, and Democrats need to really be careful about getting complacent with this stuff.
All right. So often in a governor's race, the campaign issues, economy, taxes, jobs, sometimes education. But what do you think the top issues will be in November? Abortion rights, voting rights, Dana?
Right. I mean, I anticipate that certainly the Shapiro campaign is going to focus heavily on abortion rights and abortion access. Already we've seen the Republican state legislature pass three bills in the course of Governor Wolf's two terms that he himself vetoed. And so we can expect more of that type of legislation coming out of the state legislature. So they are going to focus on that. They're going to focus on the fact that the next governor gets to appoint, right, the Secretary of State in terms of election security and counting those ballots and thinking about 2024, whether or not Mastriano may have the opportunity to appoint an alternative slate of electors. That they talked about in 2020. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to focus hard on those election democratic issues in addition to abortion.
Julia, what do you think will be the top issues maybe in the gubernatorial race?
I think Dan is absolutely right. And I think on the Republican side, you see a lot of the inverses. You know, we heard in Mastriano's acceptance speech last night, day one, no critical race theory. Day one, you know, we'll make sure they're still kind of speaking about the pandemic restrictions and freedoms. And so I think a lot of if Mastriano goes with the message he has now, which there's nothing to indicate he's the kind of guy who reins it in just because the establishment wants him to, I think it's going to be a lot of anti-abortion, anti-mail-in ballot voting stuff, and just kind of this general conservative patriotism thing. And I would just add really quickly, I think another reason Shapiro wants to face Mastriano is money. You know, Mastriano really won this thing with like next to no fundraising operation. So what that looks like in a general election and whether the party, you know, rallies around Mastriano the way he would need them to be competitive in the money race will be interesting.
All right, let's move on to U.S. House District 12, where 14-term incumbent Mike Doyle is retiring. When we checked the Department of State website this morning, the margin was about 450 votes, Summer Lee ahead of Steve Irwin. Thoughts on this race, Dana, where Summer Lee could become the first Black woman member of Congress from Pennsylvania?
Right. This is, one of the points I sort of made at the top of the show was that, Allegheny County Democratic Committee came out strong with some certain endorsements. We know that Steve Irwin was a part of that support. And Summer Lee, who has a strong state legislative record, is much more progressive than Steve Irwin and ran on that and has been successful in getting her vote out. But certainly with the shape of the new district, we're pulling in some more conservative areas in Westmoreland County where you see Steve Irwin doing better. So we'll see if Summer Lee's lead continues to hold as we go through these absentee ballots today. But you definitely see a stark contrast, between where the party sort of is in terms of party leadership in the county and where the voters are that come out in these primary elections. There's definitely a gap there.
A pro-Israeli political committee spent a huge amount of money on ads attacking Summer Lee for not being a loyal Democrat, saying she wanted to dismantle the Democratic Party. Chris did a lot of reporting on that. Ben, I wanted to ask you, what does the outcome of this race, specifically if Summer Lee wins, say about massive dollars coming in to try to influence a race?
I think that, you have massive dollars versus like ground campaigns and activism. I think there was a huge gap between what Summer was doing here and around Allegheny County to counter those advertisements. I saw tons of volunteers, a lot of outreach versus just kind of a pounding over the air. And I think that is going to be a strategy a lot of campaigns employ against these kind of like massive airwave spending.
Mm-hmm. Chris, you spoke to Irwin at the polls yesterday. What did he tell you about outside money and not meaning direct contributions to his campaign?
Yeah, I mean, this has been his sort of line all through, which is these are super PACs. We're not allowed to coordinate by federal law, da 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 da. But there's also nothing that says, you know, that Steve Irwin couldn't have said, please go away in a very public, forceful way. I don't want these ads. And, you know, candidates and Irwin has been one of them, do what are called sort of the red box posts, where you sort of put messaging on your own website and it's viewable by the public. But super PACs can look at those pages and say, oh, this is the kind of message the candidate wants to put out. I think Ben's quite right. One thing that Summer Lee is very good at is using these kinds of things that target her and turning them around and making a referendum about the attacks on her. And it's very successful.
In our last minute, so very briefly, with Mastriano's win endorsed by Donald Trump, possibly Mehmet Oz, we don't know yet, endorsed by Donald Trump. What's the message for Donald Trump from this election? Very briefly, Ben.
I think that, you know, he still has influence over the party and can still direct a huge segment of their base.
Julia.
I think that's absolutely right. I'm just going to ditto what Ben said. A lot of Trumpism throughout the PA primary.
Dana, does it say anything to you about Donald Trump's influence?
It says that it's still strong here in Pennsylvania.
And Chris Potter, you get the final word on the impact of some of these races on Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a big factor, but he's not the only factor. And that's one reason there's so many questions about Oz that I think he wasn't entirely able to overcome that the way he has in other races.
We've been speaking with Julia Taruso, political reporter, Philadelphia Inquirer, Ben Forstate, political consultant. Dana Brown is the executive director of the Pennsylvania Center for Women in Politics. And Chris Potter is WESA's government and accountability editor. Thanks so much, folks. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Thanks to our team, Nick Konopko, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.